Welcome to the Florida Roundup. It's the statewide edition this hour. Thanks for listening. I'm Tom Hudson in Miami.
And I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville. Well, it's expected to be the most expensive U.S. Senate race in American history. Governor Rick Scott went to Orlando Monday to announce his long-anticipated run for the U.S. Senate, and he did it live on Facebook. Scott told the crowd, "We can change Washington."
In this campaign, I'm going to put out a variety of policy initiatives. And let's start with the obvious. This concept of career politicians has got to stop. We have to have term limits on Congress.
Now, Scott is challenging the incumbent Democratic U.S. Senator from the Sunshine State here, Bill Nelson. He has held that office since 2001. Nelson quickly responded to the governor's announcement that he'd be going after his job, telling the Orlando Sentinel he's ready for the competition.
I always, when I have an opponent, I assume that they are the toughest opponent, and I run like there's no tomorrow.
Nelson went on to say he'll have to run double time like there's no tomorrow in this race because, of course, what's expected to be a very expensive battle against Scott. Both major parties are going to give this race everything they've got in terms of money and resources. Scott, of course, should likely pour a big chunk of his own fortune into the contest, too. He's done that before. We begin the hour here on the Florida Roundup with a closer look at Bill Nelson versus Rick Scott and how it plays into national politics as well, as we welcome Sergio Bustos, senior editor for Politico, and Daniel Cronrath. He's a professor of political science at Florida State College at Jacksonville. It's 305-995-1800. Give us a call on the Florida Roundup right now as we talk about this very pricey U.S. Senate race taking shape here in Florida. Sergio Bustos, let's begin with you. Rick Scott saying he's an outsider. He's going to change Washington. He's not a politician. Is that something he can run on, given that he is at this point a career politician with two terms in Tallahassee?
Melissa, exactly. I mean, you're looking at now a politician with a record, 8 years in public office, plenty of fodder for Senator Nelson's campaign to attack. That whole idea of being a newcomer, yes, it played well back in 2010 because it was factual. Now, you know, you've got someone who's got plenty of experience and, again, plenty of fodder to attack if you're Senator Nelson.
Daniel Cronrath, your thoughts about what Bill Nelson said in response, "Oh, I'm going to run like there's no tomorrow." Well, until this race, Bill Nelson really didn't have to run, let's be clear, like there was no tomorrow. He's been lucky in terms of getting reelected each time without really strong, credible opponents. And he's been successful in Florida as a centrist Democrat. This is different, though, for Bill Nelson. How do you see this contest?
Yeah, I think this is going to be a very, very different kind of election for Senator Nelson. If there's one thing that Governor Scott has shown himself to be, it's a very, very competitive and very, very fiery campaigner. He is, as you mentioned, sitting on his own fortune. So I think one of the other things that Senator Nelson should be prepared for in this race and that we should be prepared for is folks are going to be seeing their commercials in the near future is that, Governor Scott's never gotten above 50% in a general election. Pretty much his entire campaign strategy has been attacking who he's running against. In the case of Senator Nelson, obviously Senator Nelson has a long and established career. So there's going to be plenty of things that Governor Scott's going to be able to bring up. So I think one of the things that moving forward, sadly, for most of us living here in Florida, is this has the potential to become a very nasty race in addition to a very expensive race.
What are the sources, Sergio, of that nastiness? In other words, and we'll talk certainly about the issues. There's no doubt about it because both of these gentlemen have relatively lengthy records that we can dissect here. But the personalities here, Bill Nelson, kind of an aw shucks politician, and Governor Scott as a campaigner, anything, and certainly very disciplined with his message of economic prosperity and jobs.
No, a nasty negative, it's because it works. People don't like it. Voters don't like it. People always complain about it. But I would always say that if it didn't work, campaigns wouldn't use them. But in fact, they are effective.
But what's going to be the source of the nastiness? In other words, where is Scott vulnerable on the nasty stuff and where is Nelson vulnerable on the nasty stuff?
Oh, well, Nelson is clearly going to go after Scott on the gun issue because it's fresh in voters' mind given what happened in Parkland. He's going to go after Scott on the offshore oil drilling. Scott flip-flopped on that after the Trump administration announced it wanted to open up offshore oil drilling off the Atlantic coast. Those are two big issues that I think Scott Nelson will attack him on. And then you might drum up the time that Scott was head of the hospital chain executive, and that whole thing will get brought back up again.
That could all come up again.
And the whole thing of him having all this money too, I think it might be another issue to attack him with. Here's this wealthy multimillionaire heading to Washington.
Sure. Okay. So Daniel Cronrath, we can sort of see the outlines of Bill Nelson's campaign, and you would expect too he'd try as hard as he could to tie Rick Scott to Donald Trump, to try to paint that as a negative. And perhaps get swing voters who might not like the president to vote for the Democrat. What's Rick Scott's strategy? He's going to run on his record of job creation in the state, and he can point to 8 years of governance in Tallahassee. What's his strategy to try to make Bill Nelson unacceptable to the voters?
I think what Governor Scott's going to try to do is probably try to paint the picture of Bill Nelson as somebody who is extremely liberal, who is out of touch with your typical Floridian voter. I think another thing is that because he is a career politician, as he suggested before in his announcement, that Senator Nelson's going to have a variety of things that a treasure trove, if you will, of votes that he can go back to over the course of his lengthy career to bring up about him. One of the things I think that it plays in Senator Nelson's favor on this, however, is that because he's had such a lengthy career, I mean, pretty much anything about Bill Nelson that's out there is something that you would already be aware of. He has a very, very established candidate. He's been, three times successfully run for the U.S. Senate. So it's not as if that Governor Scott's going to be able to find out, you know, a lot of things or skeletons in the closet, if you will, things along those lines that he could potentially use against Senator Nelson negatively.
Okay, and we're talking politics this Friday afternoon on the Florida Roundup as Governor Rick Scott, leaving Tallahassee, announces he'll run for the U.S. Senate against incumbent Democratic Senator Bill Nelson. Who will get your vote? What do you think about this race? It's slated to be the most expensive in American history. 305-995-1800 to join the show right now. Let's go to Michael in Doral. Hi, Michael. Happy Friday.
Thank you. I have a quick question. Didn't the governor just sign a new bill called the Resign to Run bill, which basically says that anybody who's holding elective office has to resign from his current position to be able to run?
He did, I believe, but I think Sergio Bustos, he exempted himself from it, didn't he? Can you clarify?
The other thing is his term ends, next January.
Right.
So by the time he gets elected and takes office, it's just a matter of transition. I mean, the one job ends, the other one in the Senate would begin, assuming he wins.
It's a moot point if the governor wins. But Michael, you're right. It was this Resign to Run law, which essentially states that if you are an elected official in the state of Florida and running for a higher office, so to speak, you've got to resign your current public office.
Yeah, which basically makes him, he's going against a law that he actually just signed, because there are a few people in Miami that also finished their term at the end of this year that are just dropping off and not even running for the other position that they want.
Well, one of the cases you're talking about, and we'll mention this here in a moment, which is in the Florida 27th congressional race, which is the race to replace longtime Republican Congresswoman Ileana Ross Leighton, where lots of Democrats have crowded that field, and we'll talk about that in a moment. But that situation, Michael, is a little bit different, where you had at least one sitting state senator Democrat who's not up for re-election, who would continue to serve in the state Senate and run for the U.S. Congress. And this law squarely would affect that particular candidate, which we'll mention in a moment. 305-995-1800 is the telephone number. Let's stay in South Florida. Erica is in Fort Lauderdale. Erica, you are on the statewide Florida Roundup. Go ahead, your thoughts.
Yes, hi. I was just calling in to say that I really don't mind who's running for office. I just want to know what's being done about election engineering. because I want to know that my vote is going to be counted as I voted accurately and not to be altered or my mail-in ballot to be thrown away.
Sure. Have you experienced that in the past, Erica?
Pardon me?
Have you experienced that in the past?
Well, in Broward, we just had a situation where we really don't know what happened with our mail-in ballots. So there was a case regarding that. And then I also have done some reading about the reason I became a mail-in ballot person is that I read that the election machines that were purchased by certain corporations, they put in the contract for the election officials to sign, you're not allowed to audit after the election.
Okay. And thanks for that call, Erica. At the same time, Sergio Bustos, Florida Democrats are pressuring the Florida Secretary of State, Ken Detzner, to seek federal funding to fortify the state's election equipment and systems databases. They're concerned about the sanctity of the voting process and election security. Clearly, voters are too, as this call just shows. What about that piece of all of this?
I think that's going to be a concern for all voters, not only here in Florida, but across the country. But as noted, you know, when you go to vote in Florida, just like anywhere else, the problem comes with voting records, not necessarily your ballot, because it's not connected to the internet, which has been the whole issue involving, you know, Russian interference and the like. So I don't want to say for sure, but I mean, I think everyone's putting a lot of attention on that. And even before the Russian investigation, all this came up when you went all the way back to the crazy 2000 contest where, you know, George Bush won by, you know, 500 some votes. There was all the butterfly ballots and all the problems they had. So I don't think it's the biggest issue that's going to be worrying voters as much as some of the major public policy issues.
Beyond just voter security, Daniel, what about your thoughts about voter disenfranchisement? How vulnerable is Governor Scott on that?
Well, you know, that's going to be a really, really interesting issue. You know, very rarely do you look down ballot to basically determine things that are going to be driving people to the polls. But I think that the coming amendment, Amendment 4, I believe it is going to be on voter restoration rights, is going to be one of those issues.
For felons, right?
For convicted felons in the state.
Right, for convicted felons. This is there's a lot of passion across the state for this particular issue. And it's one that Governor Scott has staked, I mean, in terms of public polling, a very unpopular opinion on. And I think what you could see is that typically in off-year elections, you know, you're looking at roughly a 49 or a 50% voter turnout rate. I think popular theory would be is that the higher the number the Democrats can drive up folks coming to the polls, the worse that's going to be for Governor Scott in this race. I think relative to this not being, again, being an off year, I think that, you know, an issue like Amendment 4 with him being so out in front of it and so publicly opposed, you know, to you know, ending or what is, you know, currently what some have just flat out said is really just a 150-year-old racist practice going back to the end of the Civil War in Florida, where we have the ability to deny folks who have done the, you know, done the crime, served the time, and are not allowing them to vote again. I think the other thing to the caller's point that I'd like to emphasize, too, is this really is one of the advantages in having a decentralized election system in the state. All 67 counties can conduct their own elections. And most of our supervisors' elections, the ones that I've known personally and professionally over the years, take their jobs very, very seriously. So while there obviously is cause for concern there, I think as Sergio pointed out, you know, it's not connected to the internet, and there is a high degree of local control, making sure that the sanctity of our local of our statewide election is being upheld at the local level.
All right, let's go to some more calls now as we talk about Rick Scott versus Bill Nelson. It's politics this Friday on the Florida Roundup. Nicholas is in Miami. Hey, Nicholas.
Hi, yes. I'm Nicholas de Cordova. I just wanted to say that I'm an independent millennial voter. I didn't vote for Trump or Hillary Clinton. However, because Rick Scott did such a good job governing Florida, and specifically during his time in the most recent hurricane, even though I'm very environmentally friendly and he doesn't have the best record there, I got to say he's got my vote.
Okay, and you base it in particular on how he handled the hurricane.
Yeah, I mean, it was probably the best governor's ever handled a hurricane from what I've seen. And it's not just from what he's handled the hurricane. Florida's been doing great since he's been in office. And yeah, I personally, I think he's been the best governor we've had in a long time.
All right. Thank you for that, Nicholas. Sergio Bustos, Governor Scott can run on that record of shepherding the state through these horrible, severe weather events. And he can talk about job creation. That's going to be a winning message with some voters. So what about Nicholas's point of view?
Oh, it's a good one. I think one thing could be overlooked on Governor Scott is during Hurricane Irma, which struck the state September 10th, you know, he immediately went into action and he's all over the TV with it just because of the nature of the storm. But then following it up, and you saw this with his announcement on Monday, who was there with him but the Lieutenant Governor of Puerto Rico.
Right.
And Scott has made a huge effort to reach out to these, to the many arriving Puerto Ricans coming to the state who've relocated here from what's happened. And that's going to play well with him. I think people, you can't overlook what he did there as a very generous gesture.
Let me squeeze in another call here before we go to break. Nicholas in Miami talking about his support for Governor Scott in spite of what Nicholas deemed kind of some trouble around an environmental record. Steve in Fort Myers, you're joining the Florida Roundup. You want to talk about the governor and his record on the environment?
Yes, as a Republican, you know, I would have a tendency to vote for Rick Scott, but I've seen over the last 8 years the way he stacked the water, South Florida Water Management District with non-scientists and people who have big sugar interests. And essentially, we have a hydrology in Florida which now suits big sugar and goes against tourism and real estate. And so anybody who's gone against the business interest, the primary business interest in Florida, is not somebody I can vote for.
Okay. Daniel
Steve,
Cronrath.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, I think that there's the, listen, I think that Governor Scott's environmental record is ripe for the picking if you're the Nielsen campaign. I think it's going to be he's made a lot of decisions for the sake of job creation and deregulation, which have come at the expense of Florida's environment. I think that it's going to be one of these issues that he's going to have a very, very difficult time defending. And listen, the last time I checked, I'm really not even sure if Governor Scott's on board yet with accepting climate change as established science.
Well, and of course, there was this whole kerfuffle when it was reported that his staff at agencies that were tasked with environmental protection, it was reported they weren't allowed to use the phrase climate change.
That's right. They basically had to edit their language not to use the word climate change and come up with, as I recall at the time, some rather creative ways to explain what all of us would just, you know, refer to as climate change.
And that's an issue that could drive some votes for or against. And the Second Amendment, which we can keep talking about, the gun issue in this state has become a potent one for these candidates as well. Mm-hmm. After, in particular, the mass shooting at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School, that should certainly be a factor in this campaign, too.
Yeah, we'll just have to see. I mean, as time moves on, you know, one of the things that we had discussed previously, Melissa, you know, regarding which is different about the March for Our Lives movement is the often after mass shootings, the public loses awareness. It's not we care, but the passion
will
is
it
lost.
Stay in the forefront
right.
through the midterm elections and beyond.
Right.
We'll keep talking about this here on the Florida Roundup this Friday afternoon. We want you to join the conversation with us as we are talking politics on the show. Rick Scott versus Bill Nelson, a quick break and more to come. Keep listening. And welcome back to the Florida Roundup, our statewide edition. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville.
And I'm Tom Hudson in Miami. Analysts suggest this U.S. Senate race this year between Bill Nelson and Rick Scott here in Florida could skyrocket to $200 million in spending. Man. Scott has spent more than $80 million of his own money on his two gubernatorial campaigns. He's a former healthcare executive whose wife also has her own multi-million dollar fortune. Now, a federal elections complaint has already been filed against the governor. A left-leaning group says Scott used a political action committee he chaired for Donald Trump's 2016 election to get donations for his own U.S. Senate run before he officially announced his campaign this week. But the governor told reporters this in Jacksonville.
As you know, I'm only responsible for, you know, I only get work on the campaign accounts. That's what we're responsible for. You have to reach out to people at New Republican. We're very transparent in what we do.
Now that Scott is officially a Senate candidate, he gave up control of that committee. It's supporting his efforts to unseat Bill Nelson. And, you know, Tom, Scott has shown a willingness to take a more moderate stance on contentious issues like guns and the environment over the last year. We were just talking about that. And he seems to be moving toward the middle on other issues just as this campaign kicks off. At the same time, other Republican candidates for office in Florida, well, they're moving more to the right, like Congressman Ron DeSantis, for example, running for governor. DeSantis says he would have vetoed the gun law recently passed by the Florida legislature and suspended Broward Sheriff Scott Israel, both in relation to the Parkland school shooting. What about Florida Agriculture Secretary Adam Putnam? He's running for governor and calls himself a proud NRA sellout. Putnam's website has a petition asking other proud NRA sellouts to sign their names, and he is the fundraising front runner in the governor's race. So it's 305-995-1800 to join the Florida Roundup as we continue this discussion with Sergio Bustos of Politico and Daniel Cronrath of FSCJ. Rick Scott runs to the middle. Other Republicans run to the right. Let's go now to Arthur in Hollywood. He has some thoughts. Arthur, you're on the radio. Go ahead.
Good afternoon. First, I think Nelson may not be dynamic, but he's done an excellent job over the years. The concern that I have is the hypocrisy of Governor Scott, in that when the Parkland thing happened and Cruz things were missed by the FBI, he called on the FBI director and heads to roll in the FBI. Yet when during the hurricane, when in Hollywood Hill, the nursing home had problems there and the governor's office was called, and they did nothing, and 14 people died. You heard nothing about, him taking any responsibility for that. When you talk about transparency from the governor, how he even became governor with what happened with his healthcare company, he's never really answered questions about that. And I just think it would be terrible for him to be elevated to the. And he bought. His two terms were bought by him with personal wealth. I just think that he should be on his way out.
Okay. All right, Arthur.
We get
yes.
it. Yeah, the vulnerability around health care, and the governor certainly was the case during his initial 2010 campaign. It did not hurt him, though, at the voting box, Sergio. What about this? The tragic story, and the investigation continues with these nursing home deaths after Hurricane Irma, and the role that the governor's office played leading up to that emergency.
Well, Scott's argument is real simple. He blames the nursing home owners for not doing something on their part to save the lives of these folks in this very tragic incident. What I was going to point out is that, at the end of the day, whether these issues have staying power is one thing, but one issue that will have a lot of say come November is Donald Trump, the president. This is as much a referendum on Trump as anything else, and I'm not going to be the first or the last pundit to say that. You're going to hear that from here.
You're going to hear a lot of that, yeah.
But Trump is the elephant in the room, whether you...
Yeah. Daniel Cronrath, what about that? Because Rick Scott, more than any other governor in the country, has aligned himself with this president.
Right, and I think to the caller's point, after the event and you had the calls for the FBI director to resign, let's not think that that wasn't as much the situation that had just took place, the tragedy, versus it was Rick Scott trying to help his friend, Donald Trump, sully the reputation of the FBI, which, of course, has been something that the president has been engaged in now since the last year and a half of the investigation, trying to make us all skeptical of the Bureau and the ability of the Bureau to do its job and to be impartial in this investigation. I think Sergio is exactly right. The 800-pound gorilla of this entire race is going to be Donald Trump. Where will the president be in November? Well, we have a President Pence by November. With the speed
of the special counsel investigation, you mean?
Yes, and I think that one of the things from this week, that would impact this race in Florida is that I don't know, even though President Trump has been unique, should we say, in his Twitter use. I think there's been a lot of pretty accurate observations that this week it really looked like the president was unraveling with a lot of his tweets.
You're talking about his Twitter feed.
Yeah, with his Twitter feed. You can see, I think, that if his tweets are any reflection of his anxiety over the investigation, I think that things had been ratcheted up quite a bit this week.
But you know what? Let me just jump in and say to Sergio and Tom, President Trump still has an 85% approval rating among Republican voters. So it this can cut one of this can cut right down the middle in Florida, where these races tend to go one point or another.
Yeah, Melissa, I think it's a very good point, because the question becomes, come November, will Trump supporters in Florida, who, just like when he said during the campaign he could shoot someone on Park Avenue and no one would be a witness against him, will those folks show out versus the group really launched by these Parkland, Florida kids, whether the young people in the state will come out and vote? If those come out in large numbers either way, they could tip the scale, because, again, expect this to be a very close race, just like every big statewide contest.
Marty, your phone call is 305-995-1800. Speak to the entire state of Florida here on the Florida Roundup, our statewide edition. Hi, Aaliyah in Dade County. Raphael is on line three. Thanks for holding on. Your thoughts, Raphael. You're on the radio.
Hey, how's it going? Yeah, with the recent addition to another month of the hurricane season, I'm really, really concerned with how in bed with the insurance companies this governor is, and what kind of influence that's going to have down the road. I've seen the premiums almost double over the past few years. Meanwhile, the coverages are being stripped away with sinkholes in the center of the state. I mean, you name it. This guy is all about making certain people, you know, lining their pockets and not helping the average Floridian.
Raphael, we got it. Certainly some concern there about big industry in the state of Florida and insurance and hurricanes. Boynton Beach, Dan is on line four. Dan, you want to talk a little bit about politics and hurricanes too?
Yes, I was shocked to hear about the millennial who thinks that Rick Scott did a great job in the hurricanes. He ordered immediate evacuations of Miami area. I know a lot of friends of mine who were in a panic running over to the West Coast to avoid the hurricanes, only to have the hurricane then shift over to them. Then they're heading north towards Georgia, then hurrying in circles, getting caught on the road. I think that's not a good way to handle it.
Well, and just to be clear, I don't think, correct me if I'm wrong, Sergio, I don't think the governor ordered those evacuations. I believe that is a local government call.
Yeah, that's also...
He called for people to take the warnings very seriously.
Yes.
We still had a lot of people handling it. We have reports that the nursing home thing tried to go to the governor, tried to get state help to get electricity hooked up, and he didn't answer back. I'm also personally outraged at his complete refusal with this recent court ruling about finding a way to help felons get their voting rights back. I don't even know why felons can't vote while they're in jail. Doesn't make any sense. They're still citizens of the country, and his position's on the death penalty. I don't think there's a Republican in the state who actually believes that this A-plus rating, when he becomes senator, will be in danger from the NRA.
Huh.
Is just kissing up lately is putting lipstick on the pig, as far as I'm concerned. And most of the first 6 years he was in office, he benefited from the Obama investments to get the economy turned around. I don't see that he did much of anything to help the economy.
Tell us how you really feel about Rick Scott.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Thanks for that.
Listen,
call. Daniel Crownrath, go ahead.
Sure. And to the caller's point on this, relative to the March for Our Lives and the NRA and the current climate and our discussion in the United States on gun policy, perhaps the NRA was a little bit wrangled with the governor's decision. But rest assured, come fall, that given the choice between Bill Nelson or Rick Scott, the NRA and the pro-Second Amendment vote will be squarely in the camp of the governor. That's not going to be questioned. So while the governor may have appeared to approach the middle a little bit more in this issue or take a concessionary tone, I think we all know who the NRA is going to be backing when it
comes
to fall.
Sure, of course,
There's no question.
And we've touched a nerve today. People really are enjoying talking politics on the Florida Roundup this Friday. Let's go to Jan in Miami. Hello, Jan. Thanks for your call.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for taking my call. And I just have two very quick comments. I will, number one, be supporting Bill Nelson. And these are my reasons very quickly. Number one, I just want to echo or kind of piggyback on what was said about the way that our governor handled the hurricane situation. He was given accolades for that. But I want to say that also Bill Nelson was a very powerful force during that time, on television, encouraging the people to evacuate. So I want to give him equal kudos and accolades. The other thing is this. I think that it was very distasteful to me that during the hurricane time, instead of making a phone call to President Obama, Rick Scott called Trump And his response was, oh, I did it because I have a relationship with him. That is very unsettling to me, because regardless, you are the governor. You have to follow protocol.
What hurricane are you talking about? What hurricane are you talking about, Jan?
The past hurricane that we
hurricane
had.
Hurricane Irma?
Yes, correct.
Okay.
And what? Right. You're saying you didn't. I'm confused.
Unless I had erroneous information, when things were getting really bad, there was a phone call that was made to Trump by Rick Scott.
Right.
And at the time, it was President Obama.
I believe that would have been Hurricane Matthew.
Yes.
That was Hurricane Matthew.
Yeah. I apologize. Yeah. It's all right.
That's how we keep time here in Florida, is the hurricane.
Exactly.
I know. I've been here all my life. I'm just getting confused.
Yeah.
But the bottom line is this. I felt that was very distasteful. And his response was, I have a relationship with Trump. Okay. I don't care about your relationship. There's protocol and there's the respect for the office.
Jan, we hear you. Thank you for your voice here. What's interesting to me, Sergio, and Daniel, is the pundits we have on here, very learned, very acknowledged, very experienced. The journalists we have on here, Melissa, you and I, a lot of time in the trenches with politics. We're talking about gun issues and felon rights. The callers are bringing up performance during hurricanes. That is a big issue, Tom, and it's going to be a campaign issue.
I can't imagine that it won't be. And it's interesting to hear the callers have, they see this through their political lenses, whether they think Rick Scott handled it this well or whether or not he didn't.
I feel a seminar course coming on the politics and weather.
Very unpredictable, guys, because
we got another season before Election Day.
Yes, exactly.
And if you really think about this, though, in American politics, the issues that impact people the most, I mean, natural disasters are one of those things which are visible. Oh, yeah. They shatter lives.
They affect us all.
Think about when Governor Romney was running for president and Governor Christie being accused of costing him the election because he had the moment walking through New Jersey and looking at the damage of Superstorm Sandy or even the public opinion of President
Obama at that time.
Or President Bush flying over Katrina and looking at the damage from the airplane. The criticism.
And that hurt President Bush
at
the time.
I mean, it's so we can basically think about, these very, very issues which are more intellectual and such. But the reality it is, I mean, and of course this has changed a little bit, but, some of the most local issues to voters are the things that impact their homes, their families, their lives, and that is often natural disasters.
Yep.
Let me remind folks, you are listening to the Florida Roundup statewide edition from Florida Public Radio. We go to Sarasota next, where Andy has been very patient for us. Andy, thank you for joining us here statewide. Your thoughts on all this?
Sure. I've got two things that I'd like to talk about. First of all, the gun issue. I live in an area where we have some acreage. There are 3 and 5 acre lots, and the governor signed some ridiculous bill that allows people to discharge their firearms on anything more than an acre. Now, if you read this bill, there's nothing in this bill that stipulates any kind of safety precautions that need to take place or anything like that. So, it's pretty dangerous and it's a pretty ridiculous bill to sign, in my opinion, anyway. The other thing is, I never thought I would agree with anything that came out of Rick Scott's mouth, but this thing about term limits, that's a great idea. I don't know whether that's going to get any traction or not, but, the seats in the Senate and Congress were never meant to be lifelong positions. And if people want to see things change in Washington, that's where it needs to change.
Is that enough to sway you away from Senator Nelson in another 6 years?
It probably would. I mean, I think that those things need to rotate, and there needs to get to be new blood put in there and new ideas, and get away from all these lobbyists that are controlling everything in Washington.
One thing for the caller I'd be interested in is how Governor Scott would convince his 534 colleagues in the Congress to pass term limits on themselves.
Sure.
That would be a lift.
And can Rick Scott make that stick to Bill Nelson? Oh, don't give him another 6 years. He's a career politician. Is that a line of attack that will
sure,
work?
Sure, I think it's a perfectly viable line of attack. I mean, of course, Senator Nelson, was served in the Army during Vietnam and was a law school graduate. But he very quickly entered public service at a very young age as a elected official. So if you are somebody like Governor Scott and you've had a successful, while questionable in many quarters, business career, you know, Governor Scott came into politics after he had already done something else and done something else successfully. So I think that's a perfectly fine avenue for him to pursue.
One more call here. This one, Al in Palm Beach County. Al, thanks for holding on. You're on the radio.
Thank you, and thank you for taking my call. Before I get into what I was going to say, let me just answer that the gentleman from Sarasota. Yes, term limits is a good idea. I've wrestled with this myself. But what the caller said when he said that if we establish term limits, we move away from lobbyists running the show, it's exactly the opposite. The more you have term limits, the more lobbyists and staffers run everything. They don't have term limits. The lobbyists can be there for 40 years. But after 8 years or after whatever term limits you put, that senator, that congressman has to leave office. And the new one that comes in as a freshman doesn't even know where the restrooms are, let alone how to get things done. So the lobbyists are actually going to control more. But let me say this.
Go ahead,
what
sir.
Do you guys, I
time's ticking away, about a minute.
Are. I want to hear what your guys think about, is Bill Nelson going to run for reelection for real, or do you think the party's going to move him into the gubernatorial race?
He's going for Senate.
Interesting there. Right. Sergio, Daniel.
It's for real.
It's for real.
Yeah.
Sergio. Right.
Yeah. It's. I don't think he's going anywhere.
But that's an interesting point the caller made about lobbyists and how politically savvy are our listeners and callers? I'm impressed.
Yes,
they are impressive. And so, you know, the polling's all over the map on this race. Right now, the polls show Nelson, most of them anyway, with a tiny bit of an edge, but it's early. There's a lot to happen between now and November, so it'll be
a lot of money to be spent.
I think any poll taken right now is about as accurate as Punxsutawney Phil, Melissa, and that's pretty much it.
Well, your classes must be really fun. Daniel Cronrath, he's a professor of political science at Florida State College Jacksonville. Sergio Bustos, always good to have him on the show with Politico Florida. Gentlemen, thanks so much for being on the Florida Roundup.
Thank you.
Thank you.
A quick break, and in a moment, a new law about beach access in Florida has beachgoers confused. We'll tell you about it after this.
Welcome back to the Florida Roundup. It's the statewide edition this hour. Thanks again for listening. I'm Tom Hudson in Miami.
And I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville. Well, you might have heard something about this lately. Beachgoers around Florida are upset about a new law that could limit public access to Florida beaches. State Senator Kathleen Passidomo sponsored the bill. It's known as the Possession of Real Property Act. In a commentary in the Naples Daily News, Passidomo called the bill misunderstood. She wrote, "Some people have been led to believe that this bill restricts access to Florida's beaches. Nothing could be further from the truth," she said.
But about 30,000 petition signatures, Melissa, have been gathered to repeal the law already. The petition states the law will allow beachfront property owners more control over their land, allowing them to restrict access to the general public. Groups like the Florida Wildlife Federation and the Surfrider Foundation oppose this law. It was signed by the governor, takes effect July 1st with the new fiscal year.
So what does this law really do? Well, let's find out as we welcome Senator Passidomo. She's an attorney in Naples. She joins us now along with Diana Ferguson, attorney with Rutledge Assenia in Tallahassee. Diana's firm represents the Florida Shore and Beach Preservation Association. And as we talk about this beach access law, you can call us up with your questions here on the Florida Roundup at 305-995-1800. Senator Passidomo, let's begin with you. Why do you think this bill is being misunderstood?
That's a great question, and I don't know the answer to it. We can't figure it out because the bill is very clear. Not only does it not restrict access to the beach, it gives local governments a process to enlarge the public beach for the benefit of the public. Just as you know, the Florida Constitution provides that the beach seaward of the mean high tide line is held for the benefit of the public. Landward of the mean high tide line is a dry sand in many cases. The public has access on that through a doctrine called customary use. The real problem is that if there are some communities that do not renourish the beach, when the high tide line starts encroaching further and further inland, and the beaches, I guess they disappear over time, you know, when you have storms. Local governments would like to enlarge the beach so that people have more access on it, and we have to have a process because they're going to be moving into private property that's adjacent to the public beach.
Senator, does this law change property rights and property law for beachfront owners?
Absolutely not.
And you mentioned the process for cities to go under. The critics will point out that that process can be very, very costly because essentially what this law does is force local governments to file lawsuits if they want to do things around the beachfront.
Well, Frank, and it's not just cities, it's any local government and the state for that matter. If any government wants to take property that is owned by a person, they can't just do it by an ordinance. They have to go through a process through the courts to get approval to do that. I liken it to eminent domain. If you own a house and your city or county wants to enlarge the road in front of your house, they have every right to do that, but they can't just pass an ordinance.
Okay. All right. And the senator, people wanting to connect with us. Let's go to Alex in Palm Beach County. He's got a question. Go ahead, Alex.
More of a statement. Thank you. I just wanted to state that I've lived here in South Florida my whole life, and it's really sad when you're driving in Dade and Broward County. A lot of times you're on A1A. You don't even see the ocean because they've sold all the land. There's barely any access points on a lot of the coastline here in South Florida already. So to make it less accessible for the people that live here in Florida is ridiculous, and it just shows how money rules everything, and it's really, really sad that we live in a state that is a peninsula, but you can be driving for miles along the coast and not even see the water.
And not see it. Okay. Diana Ferguson, you represent the Florida Shore and Beach Preservation Association. Certainly a lot of opposition to this law. People perceive, as Alex does, that it will further limit access. Whether or not that plays out, we'll watch. But what about Alex's complaint that there's not enough access to begin with to beaches?
Well, that's a good question. But I think ultimately there's a lot of misunderstanding about this legislation. It doesn't actually apply to property owners. It applies to local governments. As Senator Passidomo said, essentially it creates a process for a judicial determination regarding customary use to be made. My association monitored this legislation. We did not participate in the legislative process primarily because for our members, they participate in the statewide beach management program, and under that program, the common law, including this customary use concept, no longer applies. So where there's a beach management project, the beach seaward of what's now going to be the erosion control line is set, and it's public. And the beach management program will require public access points to those beaches as well.
Diana, did you see a need for this legislation?
Well, again, because our members are typically not having to go through this customary use determination, it's just not something that we would have been involved in or would have, you know, asked for or
that sounds like a no. That sounds like a no. Right. So, Senator, what is the need for this? What is the great void that this legislation was written to fill?
Well, the problem is some communities are not renourishing their beaches. We don't have a problem in Collier County because we put a priority on renourishing the beach. So there is plenty of dry sand for the public to have access on. But in some communities, they're not renourishing the beaches. And as storms come in and the beaches erode, the water gets closer and closer to the homes that are on the beach. And here's the thing. Some of those homes have been there for years and years, you know, 20, 30, 40, 50 years. Now, as the beach gets eroded and the high tide line gets closer to those homes, the local governments, and rightly so, we want to have the public to be able to walk up and down the beach. But if there is no beach, they have to create more. There's two ways of doing it. One is to re-nourish the beach. If they don't do that, the second way is to take property from those houses or condos that are on the beach. There's no problem with doing that under the current law. This customary use of law is a common law that dates back to the beginning of statehood. But when you're dealing with property that's been owned by individuals for years and years, they've got building permits, they pay taxes, et cetera, you can't just pass an ordinance and take that property. Because, you know, when you think about it, local governments and the state, for that matter, are political bodies. We don't have to hear expert testimony and listen, you know, and make impartial decisions. That's the nature of government. A local government listens to the people and makes a decision, but they don't have to take testimony. They don't have to be impartial like a court would be. And that's all the bill does is create... Go ahead.
Oh, no, finish up, Senator.
I'm sorry, go ahead. No. Well, as I say, and all the bill does is make it easier for a local government to enlarge their beach for the benefit of the public. This has been totally misunderstood and misread. In fact, I even heard a TV report the other night where the reporter said, this new law will allow private owners to rope off the beach and keep the public off of it. I called the reporter and I said, well, would you please read the bill with me? It doesn't say that.
The bill doesn't, but homeowners could rope off the piece of the beach down to that mean water line because that's already their property.
And I think that's why you're seeing opposition from groups like the Surf Rider Foundation and others. They see that as a slippery slope, I guess, to further restricting access.
They can do, well, here's the thing. If they have private property, they can do that anyway. Under the current law without it. But what this does, the new law gives the local government the ability to file a customary use action and then stop that practice. The other thing is this bill does not impact local government's zoning authority. As you know, when you go to the beach and you have those signs when you get on the beach, you can't bring glassware, you can't bring dollars, you can do this, you can do that. Local government has the right under their ordinance powers for usage to regulate activities.
And so it is a complicated piece of legislation. So State Senator Kathleen Pasadomo, the co-sponsor of this, we so appreciate you clarifying some of this with us, along with Attorney Diana Ferguson, Florida Shore and Beach Preservation Association. Ladies, thanks for joining us, as I know you're getting a lot of questions. So thanks for being on the show to discuss it here on the Florida Roundup. Well, finally this hour, do you live in America's most expensive zip code?
No.
The answer is, no, me either, Tom. Well, I was going to ask you, do you live on Fisher Island, Tom?
No,
is that where you call home?
No, it's not. Though I see it frequently. It's a beautiful place here out in Biscayne Bay.
Yes, and this private man-made island near Miami is accessible only by yacht or private ferry, the priciest zip code in America, right there in South Florida.
Yeah, an average income of $2.5 million, and that was back in 2015, according to Bloomberg analysis of IRS data. Yeah, don't expect to drive there, ride your bike, jog. You got to get there. You got to float there. It's a yacht or a boat.
Have you ever been on it? Have you ever gone there?
I have gone there. I've got a source who lives there, and I have gone there.
A source?
Well, I've been practicing journalism, and sometimes that takes you to odd places, as you can imagine, Melissa. And
with very rich people.
Occasionally, that has taken me to Fisher Island. I will acknowledge that. That is true.
Lucky you. Well, I got to check that out one day. All right, that's our show for today. Thanks for listening. The Florida Roundup is produced by WJCT Public Broadcasting in Jacksonville and WLRN Public Media in Miami. Gina Jordan and Kevin Murchard are producers.
Jason Zapka, our technical director, with help from WLRN's program director, Peter Meritz. Our theme music by Miami jazz guitarist Aaron Libos at aaronlibos.com. I'm Tom Hudson.
And I'm Melissa Ross. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next Friday. Have a great weekend.